This is for all you fans out there. Let's give it up.
Be talking, be nerding. Be funny, be disturbing. Be talking, be nerding. Be spoiler alert.
Hello, listener. What's up? And welcome to the Jock and Nerd Podcast, where we deliver comic book and superhero TV and movie news, reviews, and whatever we choose.
Jock and Nerd.
My name is Imran. I'm your friendly neighborhood nerd, riding solo here for this special bonus episode. This month,
Geek Boner,
you're getting a bonus one. I had a chance to sit down and talk to TV, film, commercial, and stage actor Dwight Turner. Dwight's an accomplished actor, shows a bunch of range where he does everything from drama to comedy. Some of his credits include co-starring as Dr. Mayberry on Chicago Fire for NBC. Also played a supporting role as Theophilus in the feature film The Deported. He was acting opposite Nick Turturro and Talia Shire. And Dwight's done a lot of great projects. And he's just a super nice guy, as you're going to hear. Overall, genuine, friendly, great dude. We talk about his time at San Diego Comic-Con, where he had a movie premiere. Dwight knows an X-Man. Who is it? I'm going to make you wait to find out. And we learn a little bit about his journey from rural Kentucky to Hollywood. This conversation was recorded Tuesday, July 14th. And man, the entertainment world and life in general moves so quickly that back then, Tenet still had a release date.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, you'll hear me mention Tenet getting pushed back. Well, I'm recording this intro Monday, July 20th. Where they just put out a release stating Tenet has been delayed indefinitely.
What?
They're going to give it a new date imminently is what they said, whatever that means. But, you know, such is the world we're living in. So, yeah, just, you know, if you heard our last episode, we talked about how there may not be any new movies in 2020. It is crazy and sad, but I just hope everyone is staying healthy and safe out there. How I met Dwight was through another fella named Steve Joyner, who is a publicist, reached out to the show. So I want to thank Steve for connecting us. And yeah, I had a great time talking to Dwight. Hope you enjoy my time hanging out with Dwight Turner. Let's get into it.
The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
Dwight Turner, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on the show, sir.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm excited.
Me too. You know, I love talking to creatives and you being a working actor. I have so many questions. Let's just start out with how has your 2020 been?
Oh, my God. Where to begin? Well, the year started off well.
Oh.
And a number of projects lined up and it was really turning into what I thought was going to be a fun and interesting and a good year. And then, of course, you know, the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And everything has changed, not just for me, yeah, not just for my industry, but for everyone over the entire world. I mean, it's quite a fascinating situation that we are all in. So, you know, I had a number of projects lined up, and every project has either been postponed or canceled. And it's just the reality of the situation. And I hope that, you know, we can all get back to work soon. You know, I am in, so I did a series last year that's going to, I think, come out in the fall. It was supposed to have come out in the spring, but then that was moved because of COVID. And then I booked which is a first for me, an amazing thing happened where I can sing, but I've never done a musical. And I was asked to audition for a musical. I did, and I booked the lead romantic role in this musical. Yes, and so it, you know, the composers from New York has a show running off Broadway, or did until COVID hit, and had a show running off Broadway, and then the director writer is an award-winning guy. So it's an exciting yet scary prospect because it's new for me. It's outside of my realm of acting. But, you know, I just want to move forward and do a completely professional job and make myself and everybody else happy with the results. And we have been doing Zoom rehearsals.
Wow, interesting.
Because of the pandemic. And we actually did our first in-person rehearsal recently, and that was actually really nice to do because, you know, I mean, when you're rehearsing for something, you know, there's a connection when you're acting,
yeah.
And it's hard if you're not there with the person. It's hard to do that over a Zoom call. And so that's an exciting prospect. I have a series that filming has been put off to who knows when. That series stars, I can't go into the details, but it stars a known star of some other series who has been involved in science fiction series as well as a fantasy series. I can say that if you go to my IMDb.
Yeah. Oh, there's a little clue there, is there?
I'm listed as rumored, but I can't get the details myself. So if you do want to go to my IMDb, it's easy. It's imdb.me/Dwight Turner.
I will put, you know, you were nice enough to send all your clips and all your info. So in the show notes for this episode, so that the listener can get a feel for your work, I'm going to embed all your YouTube video clips that you've sent. And they're great, Dwight. I had a lot of fun watching these. You clearly have like an amazing range in the types of things you do and just like a solid command of the craft. I had a lot of fun. And so I noticed you play a lot of doctors, a lot of detectives, a lot of sergeants.
Yeah.
Is this on purpose?
No.
Okay. You're very good at them, though.
You know? Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. Although I like playing those roles, but it is not on purpose. You know, I do both drama and comedy. I like to vary the roles that I play. You can probably tell that by looking at the various clips. But at one point, you play a role and people like the way you play that role, and then you play another role and then another role and then another role. So you kind of get typecast a little bit. And that is what has happened for me with the detective roles and the doctor roles. But you know what? I'll take it. I enjoy playing those roles. I mean, like playing, you know, Dr. Mayberry on Chicago Fire.
Yeah, Dick Wolf's Chicago. Shared unit. I mean, he has a shared universe, like Marvel has a shared universe on the screen. It's kind of amazing what he's done. And you're convincing as a detective. You're convincing as a doctor. You have that face that's simultaneously like friendly and trustworthy, but also authoritative. Like, if you come in and you tell me a diagnosis, whatever it is, I'm believing it. If you're like, well, we're going to have to replace your arm with your leg to save you, I'm like, all right, doc, you're the boss. Let's do this. What are some of your favorite types of roles that you've maybe played or want to play?
Well, I would say probably one of my favorite roles is the one I just mentioned, Dr. Mayberry on Chicago Fire, because, you know, it was such a fantastic show to work with, and everything about it, from, you know, Claire Simon's casting office in Chicago to filming, it was like clockwork. And coming from Los Angeles, you know, I didn't quite know what to expect going up to Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was very, very pleasantly surprised.
There's a lot of production here.
There is a lot of production, and everybody really knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's to be appreciated, because, you know, when I started out, I've done quite a number of student projects with like USC, for instance, University of Southern California, which is one of the best film schools in the world. And but one of the things that prepared me for was be ready for anything. So when you're working on a show like Chicago Fire, for instance, it's everything is, everybody knows exactly what they're doing. It's just like clockwork. And it is a fantastic environment to work in.
That's always what's impressed me about, you know, stage and film and TV. I have a little minimal performance art experience in that I did a lot of student films in college and musicals and in high school and college. Really enjoyed it. And I used to intern at Conan O'Brien in the 90s. But in all cases, everybody does their part and it all comes together like a well-oiled machine. As long as you are, you know your part and you're aware of what's around you, it's amazing how things just click constantly. And in the sense of a daily talk show, every day, like all the stuff, I would do my little part as the intern, but then I would see it and everything would come together and the show would happen 4 days a week. It was amazing.
Isn't it incredible sometimes? And sometimes you end up on a project where you think like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen here? Is this going to work? And somehow it does.
You got to trust the process sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It gets pulled together. Well, that's cool that you worked with Conan. Yeah.
Yeah. Way back in the day. And I worked on two claymation sketches. This was like in 1996. And I made clay figures of Conan and Andy Richter. And one of them had Charles Bronson and Paul Prudhoe and these ridiculous celebrities. And then I helped animate them. And it was supposed to be all shitty and crappy. That was the point. And it was on television. I was like, oh, my God. Those are my fingerprints in his little face making a move. The other thing that struck me about your resume and your everything you do is the wide range of stuff you do, from TV to film to commercials to stage acting to voiceover. Do you have a favorite type? Like, if I had to force you to pick one of those,
I do.
And to do forever, which one would it be?
I love a really well written drama.
Ah.
Yeah, so something that I can really sink my teeth into, a character with multiple levels. Yeah, that just, it's, you know, if I sit down and I read a script and it's just so well written and the character is just doing, you know, like you just don't know what's going to happen next. I love that type of thing.
So it doesn't matter if it's a TV show or a movie or play.
No, film.
Oh, film drama specifically. First, yes, okay. That's first your first
and foremost,
love.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that I love, television as well. I also love voiceover, and commercials and even my stage work that I've done. But if I had to pick one, I would say a really well-written drama for film.
Nice. Yeah. Those are nice, meaty roles are always fun to watch. So let's just get to the viral elephant in the room, because this is why I was most excited to talk to you, a working professional in the entertainment industry. Like you said earlier, when this COVID thing hit, the first thing that struck me was like, wow, I've never seen something affect absolutely every industry across the board. But in the entertainment industry, I would think hit particularly hard, because you were from making the shows to going to watch the movies on, you know, the viewer end, everything stopped and it's crazy. So, in terms of, your experience, do you have a story? Like, where were you when it suddenly affected you and you're like, oh shit, this is real?
Oh, yes. I can tell you exactly where it suddenly affected me. And it was early in the process before it really hit the entire industry. So besides the musical situation, I had another crazy thing happen this year that was a first. I have done lifestyle modeling for products and for companies, but I have never done high fashion runway and never really considered myself a high fashion runway model. And I was booked for a high fashion runway show.
Wow.
So that was a first. And let me tell you, the rehearsal was very interesting because...
Did you learn the walk? Did you have to learn how to walk?
Oh, I learned the walk, yes. Or I think I learned the walk, but I didn't get a chance to do the walk because it was one of the first things that was canceled was that show. And the reason that it was canceled early on when the virus was just beginning to hit is because one of the big sponsors for the show was a cancer institute, and they were going to have people involved with that and cancer patients at the show. And so they made a decision to cancel it just out of being careful, which, you know, is understandable. But at the time I was thinking like, wow, you know, I have this opportunity that is new, and now it is gone. And I was feeling a bit frustrated because, like I said, all the other stuff had not been canceled yet. But it wasn't long after that. I think it was probably about 3 weeks after that, that stuff just started being canceled left and right. Before you knew it, there was nothing left. I mean, we went into lockdown.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, on our show, we cover a lot of like entertainment news and geek news and superhero movies. And every week it started to be the same thing. And I'm like, this is crazy. I mean, even now, what, we're like 4 months in, every week they're pushing back Christopher Nolan's Tenet by 2 weeks, and then AMC Theaters then follows and pushes their opening back. This has happened. That, you know, I don't know. I think, do you cancel the year? I don't know. How have you found yourself adjusting in your career in these last few months?
Well, it, you know, it's been very interesting. There was a lot of eating.
yes.
A lot of comfort eating.
Absolutely.
You know, it's, everything has gone online. And so I have been doing, keeping up with some training aspects online, doing some things with some casting directors online, doing actually as things are beginning to open up a little bit. And then, of course, you know, things seem to be spiking. So who knows, they may close back down again.
Yeah.
But auditions are beginning to happen. But everything is self-taped now. And so self-tape means that instead of going to the casting director's office, you self-tape at home and send it to them.
Great.
And so it's always better to be in the room with casting because then they can redirect you.
Right.
And that can't happen through a self-tape. But it's a level playing field for everybody.
Yeah.
Because it's the same situation everywhere. We will see where all of this goes, but everything is so behind schedule at this point. You know, you're going to have reruns, you're going to have stuff or maybe shows or projects that didn't make it to screen that are going to be pulled off the shelves and will make it to screen because they just need to get some content.
There is going to be a big gap in content, you know, just already you can just think of the fall new pilot season is now January, if that, maybe later, like, right. Everything's pushed back, but you know, luckily a lot of these streaming platforms have been giving us, they still have some new content coming out, and it's been kind of the only thing that's saved my sanity a little bit is that there's new movies on Netflix and video on demand.
Yes. Well, Netflix is so huge. I mean, it's like, yeah, they have such a vast library that they have things to carry through for a while. But at a certain point, you know, if we are not able to get back in and film things, there's going to have to be, you know, some decisions made on what they're going to do, what they're going to, you know, air, either reruns or pull some stuff off the shelves that hasn't been shown. Let's hope, fingers crossed, that, you know, that we are able to get back to work sooner rather than later.
I predict a rise in animated films, animated movies, which also means a rise in work for voice actor artists, I would think. What do you think? Because you can make animated films separately. You don't have to be together. There's no set. Everyone can contribute from where they are. And the technology these days, it's amazing. Just like you said with the auditioning. But I feel like there's going to be a boom of cartoons coming.
That is possible. And it will depend upon how things go with all of this and what... Yeah. How many people are allowed to work in an area and stuff, and they can send it out, you know, with situations like that, because things are turning to more online situations. Probably what's going to happen is they'll be sending this stuff to people's homes and people be doing their part from home and then sending it back. And then someone else does their part. which can make it very complicated if it is a large project. Now, if you're dealing with a small project, that's easier to see. But when you're dealing with a large project, like we're talking like a major motion picture animated, that's going to be difficult.
Those things take 5 years to make as it is. So it's probably to slow it down a little bit more. Let's talk going back to IRL, in-person shooting, which is going to have to be done at some point. Governor Newsom of California just today, he shut everything back down. He's like, no, shut it down. The bars and the gyms. Too soon. So my question to you is, being in Hollywood, seeing how things operate, can Hollywood adjust? It's not even a new normal. It's just going to have to be new and permanently new. And some things I feel like they should have been doing already. Like, you're telling me nobody was sanitizing stuff before? Like, that's gross. You should have already been cleaning things. So I would like to see that continue. But do you think Hollywood can adjust? Because think about like intimate scenes where you got to kiss someone else, or just group shots, people standing together. Are these done for a while?
Well, Hollywood will. It's not a question of can they adjust. They will have to adjust, and they will have to adjust depending upon what the outcome is of all this. You know, if we end up with a vaccine that is effective against coronavirus, then we're in a different situation than if one cannot be developed. And if immunity doesn't last, you know, they're saying now that there's a possibility that immunity only lasts for a certain period of time, and then, you know, you can catch the virus again. So it's dependent upon a lot of things, but Hollywood will have to adjust to whatever the situation is. There's not a choice.
That's a good point. And, you know, the theaters will have to adjust with new safety protocols and stuff. And, you know, not only movies have been pushed back and productions canceled, but conventions. And, you know, here at the podcast, we love going to comic book conventions, and we've gotten press passes to many of them. Man, it's a lot of fun. And we did like four last summer, and I had a whole bunch. I managed to get to C2E2 here, which was in February right before. But for the first time in 50 years, San Diego Comic-Con, the holy mecca for geeks.
Oh, I know.
Has been canceled.
Have you ever been?
I have not been. And I've been to actual Mecca. I'm Muslim, right? And it still wasn't as good because they were not showing me previews of any comic book superhero movies in the real Mecca. It's beautiful. A lot of great marble. No celebrities, so it's a little disappointing. But by they are going to do a virtual event that's going to be held on the same days, and it's soon. It's next week, July 22nd through the 26th. Virtual event for the first time. Everyone's invited to San Diego online. The same dates they were going to hold the thing. So I'm looking forward to that. But I know you have some San Diego Comic Con experience, and I wanted to hear.
God, boy, do I have a San Diego experience at Comic-Con. Yes. So in 2011, I went to Comic-Con. And how that happened is such a interesting turn of events. So I did we were talking about student films. So, years ago, I did a number of student films. And I did one student film at CSUN, which is California State University, Northridge. They have a film school there. It's, you've got USC, Chapman, UCLA, AFI. Those are the biggies. So CSUN, I went and I did a film called Owl Sorcery, which was a fantasy film, and fantasy-based film. And that film went to Comic-Con. And it was the wildest thing. It premiered at Comic-Con. Whoa. We did a panel at Comic-Con.
Wow.
And I think these were undergrads, undergrad students.
Yeah.
So I think everyone was in shock, including me, to go to Comic-Con with that, which is just such a huge event. Now, I was a complete Comic-Con newbie.
Oh, no.
So they VIP'd me for the entire week.
Wow.
I went to all the parties. It was crazy because being a Comic-Con newbie, I knew not what to expect.
So you didn't know what you were getting into, or did you?
I did not know what I was getting
into.
That's
amazing.
And I think like by I think it was Thursday.
Yeah.
So by Thursday of that week, I was one of the people who ended up sitting down in a hallway and falling asleep.
Oh my God. That's like, yeah, Thursday is like when it starts. So yeah, what were your initial impressions of, I mean, they turn, I think my co-host Anthony, who's the jock, that's the year he also actually went to Comic-Con. And, you know, I'm so jealous because I know they turned the whole city into this celebration. What was the feeling from the crowd at the panel? Because one of the things I always think is amazing with these panels is you get kind of instant feedback for the thing you did.
Yeah, well, it was fantastic, and it was kind of like a whirlwind blur because you're just suddenly like thrust into this situation, and you're talking about the film, you're taking the answers or the questions,
yeah,
giving out the answers, and when it's finished, you're kind of like, what just happened?
There's nerds. They have questions.
There are, and they did about some of the most interesting things. Like there's a scene where, you know, so Outsourcery is about a sorcerer that gets outsourced.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And I play his boss. So I'm the one who outsources him. So I have a meeting with him where I'm basically firing him. And as we're talking and stuff, I'm like, you know, look over at this plant on my desk, and I pick up this little toy water gun, and I like start watering the plant. Like, and that was one one of the questions that came up, like, how did that happen, and who came up with that idea, and stuff that you think people would never ask about, but they do.
Yep,
they
do. Comic-Con. Yeah.
it was an amazing experience. I would like to go back to Comic-Con at some point. And I would say, you know, for anyone who has never been, go at least once. There's nothing else quite like it.
No, it is. It's a once in a lifetime experience. I assume similar. So I've also been to Oktoberfest in Munich. That's like a once in a lifetime experience. You got to do that. And I think Comic-Con is on my bucket list. I'm going to have to get there. I watched the clip from the Outsourcery that you have on your website where, first of all, the character's name that you play, Brent Steel Money, that's just hilarious.
Brent Steel Money. How appropriate for that character.
Why would you trust anyone named Brent Steel Money? But you exactly. Do a great job as like this fast-talking, sleazy agent boss type. It was very good. This episode of the Jock and Nerd Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. Manscaped provides probably the best tools for your below-the-belt grooming experience, if you know what I mean. Listen, just because you're sitting around in quarantine doesn't mean you let your shit grow like a jungle down there. Right now, you can get 20% off and free shipping by using the promo code JOCKANDNERD at manscaped.com. They have an amazing ball trimmer called the Lawnmower 3.0, and it really is the best hygiene tool for the modern man. I have one of these. I use it. They are amazing. It has a ceramic blade. It stays cool, and it will not snag your nuts.
Get the fuck out of here.
No, it won't. It's true. It's got an amazing diamond cut grip. Feels great in the hand. Water resistant. And the most useful thing, there's an LED light. Just illuminates your path through excellent grooming. The Lawnmower comes in this amazing package, the Perfect Package 3.0, that also includes the Crop Preserver, Crop Reviver. You get a travel bag and a pair of boxer briefs, which, again, no lie, these are the most comfortable boxer briefs I've ever worn. God, they're like butter. Just feel like you got nothing on. Treat yourself for making it through quarantine with the Lawnmower 3.0 and the Perfect Package 3.0. Remember, use code JOCKANDNERD, JOCKANDNERD. Spell it out. You will get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. So let me ask your opinion on the state of films now, or leading up to, you know, COVID, as you know, Marvel has taken over the world. The comic book superhero genre is huge. It's maybe not reached a bubble, but it's kind of turned your theater into nothing but sequels and franchises and big budget blowouts. You know, pushing out largely the smaller, maybe more independent artsy films. Now, me as a geek, you know, this is the golden age for if you're a comic book superhero fan. So I both love it and also see how it's starting to be problematic. What is your take on what's happening? And do you enjoy any of these superhero movies?
Oh, yeah, I do enjoy them. And I would love to do one.
Oh, you'd be great in a Marvel movie. Yes,
I would love it. I would love it. Love it. Love it. I think that, like anything else, when the market becomes oversaturated, there will be a correction at some point where, you know, there may not be as many superhero movies playing as there are right now. But you know what better? See, here's the unfortunate thing, though, because of COVID, you can't go to the theater. But what better than going to a theater and seeing a big, loud special effects, you know, film? It's just, it is so fun and exciting. I mean, it's just such an escape and a thrill. And unfortunately, we can't do that right now because of the situation with COVID. Everything just keeps, you know, getting shut down, and audiences can't really be there like they were. And with the televisions that we have today, I mean, you can get a lot of detail on the screen, but it's still, it's just not the same as going to a theater.
Yeah, in a way, it's like the best use of the medium is, you know, this large outlandish production just coming at you.
Oh,
You know, it makes full. Do you have any favorite superhero movies you can think of off the top of your head?
Oh, yes. I like the, I like the X-Men series.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Yeah. They were one of the early ones that kind of, you know, set the trend.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been lucky. I've met a lot of people in my career, and one of them is Ian McKellen.
Wait,
who plays Magneto.
Get out. You hang out with Ian McKellen?
Well, not lately, but I have hung out with Ian.
Wow. And Gandalf, Magneto, amazing actor.
Yes, he is an amazing actor. Sometimes I watch some of the things he does and I'm just like, oh yeah. Yeah. He did such a good job on that.
What's it like hanging out with Ian McKellen?
Well, you know, if I ever reach the point of where I had a huge amount of success like he has, you know, I've gotten to hang out with some people that see what it's like through their eyes. So yeah, I kind of know a little bit of what to expect. But it's just fun. It's you know, it's a fun experience. And, you know, when I first got to know Ian was back when he had just done Gods and Monsters.
Oh, yeah.
And with Lynn Redgrave. And he was known, but not like now. You know, now he you know, then he would walk down the street and people would recognize him. But now he walks down the street and everybody recognizes him. And it's always fascinating to see the, you know, the transition when someone reaches a huge amount of success like he has. You know, I've known some other people who so when I first got to know Ian, he was already a pretty well-known actor. But I know a couple of other people who've become pretty famous who were unknown when I first got to know them. One is Katrina Balfe.
Okay.
Who is the star of Outlander.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so Katrina and I studied together with Donna Braun. And Katrina and I had a number of times that we worked together. And she used to come over to my place. I'd go over to her place. She almost killed me in a car accident once.
Oh, yikes. You still friends, though?
But we survived.
Okay,
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah. She's a great person. But she drove through the intersection and was not quite paying attention. Cars were coming both directions at us. And somehow we made it through that intersection without getting hit. Otherwise, Outlander may have had a completely different
different lead there.
Look, yeah.
Somebody's looking out for you. Yeah.
And the other is Clayne Crawford.
She was in Ford versus Ferrari too. Yeah,
yes. Oh,
she's,
yeah,
that's
she's
a great
very
movie.
Good in that.
Yeah, very good I in that. Remember who she is. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the other is Clayne Crawford, who was starring in the Lethal Weapon series, but he had a little run-in with Warner Brothers and the star of the other star of that show. And,
well, I remember reading
and
about that.
It didn't turn out. Yeah, didn't turn out well for him. But hopefully, Clayne will be able to put out some other good projects and get his footing again.
So let's. I wanted to know. I know you grew up in Kentucky, right?
I did. Yes. Oh my gosh. And the, you know, people say, well, it always fascinates me when I hear like an actor say like, yeah, man, I grew up in the middle of nowhere, yeah. You know, and they like grew up in Philadelphia or something. And, no, I grew up in Hazard, Kentucky,
wow.
Really the middle of nowhere. Now I'm not knocking it. It was a great way to grow up.
Yeah.
A bit like Mayberry, you know, a beautiful little town in the mountains of southeastern Kentucky, very isolated.
Oh, wow.
At least back then, you know, now, you know, you have the internet. But it was a very interesting way to grow up and did not prepare me at all.
No,
for what I would do, you know, in my life and, you know, moving to Hollywood and becoming a professional actor.
How does a kid from Kentucky find himself in Hollywood?
Oh, a lot of naivete. No, I'm kidding. You know, even though I was not working professionally as an actor when I was younger, I just knew that was what I wanted to do. And I did some stage shows here and there, caught the acting bug. And I went off to college. I got my degree in communications with a radio television emphasis. I thought for a while, maybe I wanted to be a news reporter.
Oh.
But then I knew, you know, I interned with CBS, but then I knew, like, I really want to pursue acting. And so when I finished college, the very next month, I moved to Los Angeles with someone else that I knew from college who had studied theater. And we had an agreement that no matter what, we would stay for a year.
Wow.
No matter what.
Yeah.
That was our firm agreement. Because that way, you know, we had a certain amount of money. And if we did that, you know, then we could share a place and it would all work out. He lasted a month.
Oh, no.
He lasted a month and moved back.
Was that scary? That's got to be scary, especially after a month where he ditches.
Yeah, because, you know, here I am, fresh from Kentucky, young and not knowing anyone in the city or in the industry. And, but you know, I made it all work. I couldn't afford the place that we were sharing. So I found a guest room up in the Hollywood Hills. I still remember the place is called Westside Rentals, where you could go and find guest rooms and, our guest houses. And so I had this, a guest room up in this house in Hollywood Hills. I lived two doors from Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, nice.
So, wow. With an amazing Bruce. View of LA. So, yeah, exactly. Bruce.
Is that all you heard all night outside your window? Bruce.
Well, no, but what I did hear, which was absolutely amazing.
Was he rehearsing?
He would rehearse with the window open.
Wow.
And I could hear him. And that was incredible. This was up on Fairholm Drive. I can tell you the name of the street because he no longer lives there.
Okay.
He sold that house. But that was absolutely amazing.
Man.
And, you know, it just all fell into place and worked out. I became friends with a group of actors, went to one of the actors' birthday party. And a guy came up to me at that birthday party and said, "Are you an actor?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, here's my card. I'm your friend's agent. Call me. Come see me on. I want you to come see me on Wednesday. And I'm going to see if I can get you some work." And I did. I called him up. I went in to see him on Wednesday. He got me my first ever professional audition on Friday.
Wow.
And I went and I booked it.
Wow. That is like the perfect, like, moving out to Hollywood to become an actor story right there.
But if only it were all that easy.
Well, I was going to ask when was the moment that you knew that you were like, I'm a professional. I've made it. I'm paying my bills with acting. Like,
I became a professional actor at that point because it was a union project.
Okay.
And so I was tapped heart lead into, and now it's SAG after, then it was SAG.
Yeah, you need that SAG card.
Exactly. So I got my SAG card from my first ever audition.
Wow.
And, you know, the production paid for, you know, my entrance into SAG and all that because of the Taft-Hartley, and it was all very easy. And I just remember thinking at the time, like, oh my gosh, like, wow, this is, you know, easy. But then, you know, it's not always so easy with being an actor. It's a bit of, you know, it's a roller coaster, you know, but I love it. I absolutely love it. Listen, I have canceled vacations.
Oh, wow.
Because I booked a project.
See, man, I love this. You are a working actor's actor. Like, and you could tell from the clips that you are clearly passionate. You're having a good time. It translates on screen. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I take that as a big compliment.
Yeah. So the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, you know, I think a lot of people have this dream, and many of us do. We're going to move, like you, we're going to move to Hollywood. I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to get a job as a waiter. I think, and you have chance meeting some people, and a lot of it is who you know, but I think people forget about the importance of coaching and training. And you even mentioned that you're still doing training. How important was training in your career?
It's important, but there's also, at least from what I believe, there's talent. And with acting, there's a certain level of talent there that I feel that you either have or you don't. You can't really take someone that just doesn't have it and give them training and then they're going to have it. But what you can do is take someone who has talent and make that better, and improve on that. And that is what I tried to do and what I've tried to do throughout my career. And, you know, I've gotten the opportunity to study with some really interesting people. The first people I studied with was Nina Foch, and who is no longer with us. But if you look her up, I mean, she's been in some big films, and was a very no nonsense teacher. Lived in this beautiful, magnificent home on Rodeo Drive, and that was just a completely fascinating experience. I felt like she got me off to a good start with my acting training. Donna Wrong, who I mentioned earlier, who also, you know, she was teaching Katrina Balfe and Clint Crawford. I learned a lot of important things from her. And then Margie Haber has been very instructive in my acting training. Probably more so than she even realizes, because one of the things that Margie did is she was just very intuitive and picked out things for me that were affecting my acting and brought them to my attention so that I could get rid of them and not have them continue to affect my acting.
Oh, wow.
And I will always be thankful for that.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I think people, like you said, some stuff can't be taught, but when you have that talent, base talent there, it could definitely be polished. And I think people forget that everyone could benefit, if you have a talent, from some coaching and some training.
Absolutely.
I also thought it was interesting that you do have, like, you've done some sci-fi roles, and you kind of have a comic book superhero credit in your voiceover stuff as Green Lantern.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yes. I did a Green Lantern voiceover project for Six Flags. that was interesting. Gosh, I wish I could have gone to have seen that show. That was a show called DC Comics Superheroes Live, which played for quite a number of years down in Texas at Six Flags there. And I did get to see a video of the show, and also I had some friends who went to see it, and they said it was the weirdest thing ever because this this stunt guy comes out in Green Lantern and stuff, and every time he would open his mouth,
it's you
know, it's me.
Yes.
And they're like, oh my gosh, that was the most bizarre experience ever. But that was a lot of fun. And you know, I got that gig because of a friend of mine. A friend of mine basically led to me getting to audition for that that show. And that's one of the things, you know, you were mentioned a minute ago, connections. You know, our industry is very nonlinear.
Yeah.
You know, if you study to be an attorney, for instance, you know, you can go to school for a certain number of years, you can learn all these different things, and you're probably going to end up in this situation. With my industry, it's not quite that way. You could never have done anything and then just suddenly have something fall into your lap. You can be very talented and try for years and nothing ever happens. Mm-hmm. It's just such an interesting industry in that way. You know, I have enjoyed practically every minute of it, and I wouldn't give it up for anything.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's all you say. It's who you know, but that aspect extends to a lot of things in life. And you're such a nice person. And so, you know, so friendly. And I think I'm the same way. Like, you don't want to burn bridges. I'm nice to everyone. You never know who you meet is going to introduce you to someone. So it behooves you to be a nice person.
That is completely true. That is so true. And I have ended up in situations in my career where, you know, you meet someone and then something, and you don't even really think that much about it at the time.
Right.
And then 2 years later, boom, they call you up and they're like, you know, hey, I have this. Would you be interested in this? And and it is so fun and wonderful when something like that happens.
Well, I love hearing you know, that you got work coming, and despite all this, that they're, you know, you're getting it done. That's amazing. What I want to know is what kind of stuff do you like? Are you watching anything now that you love and you can't get enough of? Is there any good content out there that Dwight Turner likes right now?
Well, I have been watching a lot of film.
Okay.
So I have not been watching a lot of series, but I have been watching a lot of film. And for me, that's varied. But what I look for in the things that I watch are things that have been recognized for one reason or another, whether it's the director or an actor or the producer. Like, there's something about that film that has been recognized, and I want to see what that is.
Any recommendations of something good out there?
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, the spot again.
Yeah, I know you are. And it's like, I've watched so much because I've been in a lot from this whole pandemic situation that it's almost like a blur. One of the things these aren't the top award winners, but one of the things that I've become fascinated by and sort of rewatching that I watched years ago is I just recently got caught up in all the Bond films.
Oh,
so I've been going through the Bond films.
Nice.
And just like the last night I watched Quantum of Solace.
Yeah.
And I like them because, one, it's a good thrill ride. It's exciting. And two, it's just fun, like what they come up with sometimes with the gadgets and the things that they see on the screen. That is what I've been going through for about the past couple of weeks. I've been going through the Bond films.
I love James Bond movies, especially because when I was little, my dad loved James Bond movies and he kind of introduced me to them. So I always think of my father when I watch James Bond, and then I remember you know, when like Octopussy came out and Roger Moore, I was like 8 years old and I was like,
who's your favorite?
That's what I was going to ask. I think it all depends who you grew up with. So clearly Sean Connery is an amazing Bond, right? But
yes.
I think I was taken to the theater to see Octopussy, and I will always love Roger Moore. He's a little bit sillier, especially in his later Bond roles. But Daniel Craig is also an interesting take on the character. But for me, I'm gonna go Roger Moore because it just connects me to like my childhood and my dad. What about you?
I'm going to go Sean Connery.
Yeah, Sean Connery, undoubtedly. Like, you can't be mad at that. Dwight, I want to give you an opportunity here to plug whatever you want. Turn our listeners on to your upcoming work or past work or whatever it is. The floor is yours,
all
Dwight.
All right. Well, hey, you know, I would say, you know, if you want to find out more about me or things that are happening, go to DwightTurner.com. That's probably the best source to see and hear about what's going on. So upcoming things. So there's the Pact, which will, I think, come out in the fall. I did a pilot with Mike Rowe. Remember Mike Rowe, the Dirty Jobs guy?
Yeah, I love Mike Rowe.
But that pilot hasn't been released yet, and I can't really say a whole lot about it other than there's a pilot. And so we'll see what happens there.
Does anybody get dirty in that? Can you say that? No? Okay, I may be asking for too much. Never mind. It's fine.
Yeah, and then there's the musical Day at the White House, which, you know, we're going to do a cast recording. We're going to do a live radio version, and then it's just going to be dependent upon when audiences can come back into the theater. We're going to put that on in Louisville, Kentucky, and then hopefully from there go to New York. We'll see.
Have you watched Hamilton yet on Disney Plus?
You know, I'm bad. I have it. But I will tell you what I did do. Yeah. I went when I was in New York. I did the Hamilton lottery. I didn't win.
Oh, you did?
I didn't win.
No, it's hard.
I did it. But boy, what a crazy one. Now, I will say this. Years ago, I did actually win the Wicked lottery.
Oh, fun. Yeah.
And I still have like a pin saying I won the Wicked lottery and had an amazing seat for that show.
Hamilton fun. Is really good. I recommend it.
Oh, I know. I got to watch it. I have that series, which I'm not at liberty to give the details of, but there's a series that's hopefully going to begin filming at some point. And then Five Floors out in the California deserts. We'll see what happens there, and everything has been put on hold with that, but I would love to see that go forward. And then, because I worked with those producers and the director before on a project called Gradation, it was a lot of fun, so we'll see what happens there. And then that whole runway modeling thing,
that's still gonna happen
to the fall.
Yeah,
possibly. We'll see. So then you'll have an opportunity to find out if I learn to do the walk.
So that's the project of yours I'm most excited about. I hope that happens. Because you're a good-looking dude. Like, I can see you up there as a runway model working to work with the look.
God.
And the walk.
But to suddenly have that happen, like...
That's crazy.
Like, after... you know, all this time is crazy. You know... Who knows? Stay tuned. I may fall off the stage. We'll see.
I mean, did you think growing up in Kentucky that one day you would be on the runway model? It's an amazing journey.
No, no. But, you know, like I said, I've done lifestyle modeling, which for anyone out there who doesn't know what that means.
That's print modeling?
Print modeling, like for... like a product or for a company. And but it's very different than high fashion. Runway is a completely different animal. But, you know, I will say this, you know, you mentioned like growing up in Kentucky. So, you know, people say, like, they'll say, but you don't have an accent.
Yeah.
Because I spent so many years, you know, living in LA. But I can bring it back at a moment's notice if I want to, because this is basically right here how I grew up talking.
There you go. That's the real Dwight Turner. Oh, we got the real. Well, and also accents are important in your line of work. The more you have under your belt, the more it's going to help you.
They are. And I actually have, you know, you were talking about training earlier. One of the things that I have done in this time off is I've been working on accents, and I have been up for a lead role. I've been in callbacks for that. For a feature film where I had to play a German, so I had to work on the German accent. But I have, you know, spent time working on a number of accents, and I think growing up in Kentucky and getting rid of that accent for the purposes of what I do has helped me be able to work with other accents. But you know, the really interesting thing. For the first time in my entire career, I used my Kentucky accent last year.
Oh my God. You're like, this is
first time.
I don't even have to work for this. This is just be myself. Well, I would hope at some point it's going to come in handy. But that's really interesting that you were, this is the continuing training. I was curious. That was great finding out it is on accents, which is something you can constantly, work on. And, you know, the amount of British people that play Americans on TV is just shocking. Sometimes you forget, like,
exactly.
I mean, so Walking Dead, they're all British.
It needs to be fair.
There is. Know? Walking Dead, you got Dwight Turner here who's got the accent. Just put him in the show. What are you doing? You're going to hire these British people.
I would love to be on that show. That would be a lot of fun.
I don't know how you shoot the group zombie scenes right now, but when they figure that out, you know. I mean,
well, it just gives you more reason to run.
Yes, yes. Farther. More distance between more distance, zombies.
Yes.
Look, man, I wish you all the best, and I hope I'm fascinated by the industry, and I'm watching different productions around the world, the reports of trying to come back, and, you know, some places in Europe, like, I think it was like a month or two ago, they were like, we're starting up, but we're making these little pods, and everyone's going to be tested, and we actually have a friend of the show, John Bellotti Jr., who is a scenic artist. He works on the Blacklist in New York. He paints sets, and he was telling us stories about how on a set, when one person has the flu, it just gets everybody. Everybody has it. They go out, they get some chips, some catering, and then boom, spreads like wildfire. So
yes, it's going to be a challenge to get the industry really going again. And I imagine that because this has been such a thing, that there will be some changes that will be permanent.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
that
everywhere.
Will become a part of this industry as well as many others. But if they can get all this under control and we can get past this, hopefully you'll have new television shows and films coming out soon. And well, at this point, not soon, because they'll have to go through the process of making them. But hopefully we will be working on them again soon.
I can't wait for, you know, production to safely resume and see what, you know, this is. It's just the new world. It is crazy. We're living through history, if you think about it. You know,
we really are. I mean, did you think half a year ago that this would be your life right now?
Listen, we're halfway through 2020. What the shit is going to happen the rest of this year? How can it get any crazier?
I'm ready for 2021. I want 2021 to be here.
I mean, you know, I've studied history, and I've read about, you know, the civil rights movement, the Great Depression, the Dust Bowl. The Spanish flu. I never thought we'd be living through all those things at once.
Yeah,
that's what's happening. It's amazing.
Something to tell your grandchildren about.
It really is. Before we sign off, Dwight, I wanted to, we have to thank our buddy Steve Joyner for connecting us. Steve just kind of emailed me out of the blue, and really right now in times of like quarantine, the way everything is, like, connecting people is probably one of the most important things that needs to be done. And he's a madman at connecting. So I can't thank him enough. And I got to meet you, and you're super nice.
Well, thank you. And you as well. And yes, thank you, Steve. And it was a real pleasure. Thank you again for inviting me onto your show and getting me to relive some memories that I haven't even really thought about in a while.
Nice. I'm glad we could go down memory lane. Thank you so much, Dwight.
Thank you. And have a good rest of your evening.
Talking Nerd.
Thanks again to Dwight for hanging out with the nerd for a little while. Great guy. Had a great time talking to him. Again, I will have links to all his information and clips of his work in the show notes for this episode. Now, I got a bunch of call to actions for you guys. I'm going to throw out a bunch of things you can do to support the podcast. It's going to be a lot, but just bear with me. I'll tell you where you can find all of it. The first thing is, you got to stay safe out there. You got to stay masked up out there. You're going to need a bunch of masks of all varieties. And we have masks for you, listener.
Jock and Nerd.
Visit our Tee Public merch shop at jockandnerd.com/shop. Pick up any of our designs as a face mask and pick up a t-shirt or a mug or a tumbler or a magnet. There's a wide variety of products to buy if you want to support the show and show that you love the Jock and Nerd podcast. If you want to chat with other listeners who listen to the show between shows, you want to get your geek on, you can join our Facebook group. It's called the Jock and Nerd Nation. It is an exclusive closed group just for you, listener. We're in there. Rug Boy's in there. Everybody's in there, geeking it up, mixing it up, or simply follow us on any of our social media platforms like Twitter at Jock and Nerdcast or Instagram. Search Jock and Nerd Podcast. If you love the show and want to support the show even more and get bonus content, you must join the Jock and Nerd Fan Club.
Jock and Nerd!
Visit jockandnerd.com/Patreon. You can make a monthly pledge and everybody gets a bonus RSS feed that has lots of bonus content. The shows come out early. There's a sports show. There's post shows. It's a lot of fun. Make sure you subscribe to the show. You can find the Jock and Nerd Podcast everywhere you find podcasts like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and more placings. We would love if you would leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We would be ever so grateful. Light up those stars. Write something nice. Okay, that's a lot of stuff I just threw at you. You can find all these links, everything that you need to take some action at the show notes for this episode at jockandnerd.com/338. You'll find Dwight's stuff there and links to all the other stuff. Look, that's a lot of stuff. But listener, if there's one thing I can get you to do, one takeaway, one thing you could do, forget all the other stuff, I will excuse it. All I need you to do, the most important thing, is to tell a friend about the podcast.
Jock and Nerd!
Word of mouth is the best way to grow podcasts. It's like a book review, you know, or a magazine review. You would read a book, and you'd be like, hey, you tell your friend you got to check this book out. Same thing with us. We need people to tell their friends, post it on your social media, get it out there. We would appreciate it. My name is Imran the Nerd. Thank you so much for listening to the Jock and Nerd Podcast, and we will peep you next time.